And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another edition of Nerdy Notions with Sasha Kaplan.
I'm Sasha Kaplan, and thank you so much for joining us after what was a very long discussion, very long overdue discussion of Endgame. We are now closing this chapter of the Marvel Cinematic Universe since, you know, Black Widow hasn't come out yet and everything else is delayed except WandaVision, but that doesn't come out until December, so we are closing this chapter.
In theory.
It has been confirmed that WandaVision is still on track to be released at the end of the year. Fight me. And so with that, we are closing this chapter of the Marvel Cinematic Universe with Daddy Issues Part 2, the movie. I mean, Spider-Man Far From Home. Goodness gracious, what was I thinking? So let's start. We find ourselves of a Mexican town destroyed when a car arrives, and it's Maria Hill and Nick Fury, and says that this is a tragedy, but there's this mention of a cyclone having a phase. And then this dude arrives in a pretty nice looking costume, who is totally not a bad guy at all. And by that, I mean, of course, he's the bad guy because it's Mysterio. Like, anybody who's watched 90s Spider-Man should know that this is automatically the bad guy. Like, come on, people. It's not that subtle.
And ladies and gentlemen, because this does get released on the TXHT website, and there is a professional wrestling podcast, no, we are also not talking about Rey Mysterio, the master of the 619.
No, we just mean Mysterio from the comic books published by Marvel Comics. I don't think anybody listening to this would have expected that.
You'd be really surprised because, like, every time you say Mysterio, and even when I think about it for the film, I have Rey Mysterio's old WWE theme music still pop up in my head.
Anyway.
There's probably other wrestling fans who have that too.
So basically, Mysterio arrives, but he's not going by Mysterio yet, as we'll find out. And he releases some green smoke. Because I trust people with green smoke.
Everyone loves but green smoke.
We get the Marvel intro to the Dolly Parton / Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You, which the Marvel theme is going. And we begin with an in memoriam, which is kind of interesting, specifically to Tony, Steve, who has been declared dead, Natasha, and Vision, before ending with Tony again. Interesting. Is this an official issued report by the media or by the government? Oh, absolutely not. It's a kid's show. Literally, it's a kid's news bulletin.
It's the high school news.
Yeah. So, which, like, I've never actually seen any, like, I've never heard of anybody in high school actually doing video production like this in their high school. It's something, okay, Michael is the only one as he's, like, raising his hand like a nerd.
I actually was, like, the co-lead anchor in middle school and stuff like that, and tried doing it in high school, but apparently I wasn't cool enough to be able to do that, so.
Huh, well, aren't you special? Anyway, so we have the school news report with Betty Brandt and Jason Onello or something like that. Lonello, that was the name. But anyway, so we kind of get a summary of what happened by the kids, and we actually have video footage of, like, a high school marching band and how some of the, half the kids just, like, vanish. And then, of course, we have them reappearing 5 years later in what is really dumbly titled The Blip. Why is it called that? The snap, the dusting.
Well, like, well, see, let's be honest. For a lot of people, like a lot of people didn't know that it was caused by Thanos in the snap, because there's no news that says, because remember, Thanos did it, like, what?
Right, but Steve mentions Thanos in his quirky little survivors group with Jim Starlin and Joe Russo.
Yeah, so, but how many people did that actually reach out to? Did it actually go to a news outlet?
It's not like there's no way to broadcast this. Tony Stark has a freaking satellite, so calling it The Blip just seems weird to me. Like, you could call it so many other things.
The snappening.
The snappening, see? The dusting, like, because they do kind of turn to dust and then sort of fade away. But no, we can't have that. We have to call it The Blip.
I, I wouldn't call it the dusting because it makes it sound
whatever.
Somebody's getting a maid service to come over to clean the house or something.
Fine. The snap, the incident. Oh, that was New York. But like, I don't know. The blip just seems weird to me. But anyway, so there's a nice little thing bit that Betty says that like, even though at the time of the blip, we had already taken our midterms, the school made us redo the entire year. That must have been awkward and uncomfortable. So now is the time for moving on. And Jason is like, oh, my little brother is now my big brother because he got dusted. The other one didn't. And so the question is, are the Avengers even a thing anymore? It's a good question. So Peter apparently has a plan. Which is this super, so I guess somebody in the school is going on a trip to Europe. So Peter has this romantic plan of buying a necklace that looks like the Black Dahlia because MJ's obsessed with the Black Dahlia murder, which fun fact, there's an article that was released last year that says they've actually figured out who committed the Black Dahlia murder. So really fascinating. Check it out.
It was MJ.
It was not. He wouldn't even been alive. But anyway, so the plan involves getting a necklace that kind of looks like the Black Dahlia because MJ's obsessed with the murder, which is totally normal. No, that actually is in fact normal for a teenager. And he's going to give it to her on top of the Eiffel Tower because it's romantic and tell her how he feels about her. Ned is, of course, completely not helpful. Shocker. He's pretty much useless in this movie. But anyway... So Ned wants to go on vacation as bachelors to get with the European girls because that's what happens when two high schoolers go to Europe. Mm. But the one question I have, I like the idea of the class going on a trip, but first of all, it's the science class, not the history class, not the English class, not the art class. It's the science class. They don't even go to any like science museums or do scientific explorations unless you count them calculating all of the physics involved with you know, renovating the hotel they're staying at in Venice. Like, why is this a science club trip or science class trip? All right, anyway, so they go to Europe, they're about to go to Europe, and MJ tells them to download a VPN so the government can't track you. MJ is still weird. Aunt May apparently helped to start or is in charge of a foundation that helps survivors of the blip. So those people that got snapped away. And then came back. Yeah, snaps work better. So the people that got snapped, when they come back and, Aunt May tells the story that she snapped back to her apartment, but there's a whole new family living there. So like, where does she go? What does she do? So she helped start this with Happy and Pepper, they started this foundation for those that got snapped. That's actually pretty good world building. And of course, Spider-Man is the spokesperson. And oh my lord, because if Peter's awkward enough talking to girls, he's even worse at public speaking. But Happy shows up in the backstage and hands her a giant check that someone had dropped off, apparently. And Happy flirts with May. As I yawn.
I thought I was more tired than you because of what my work schedule today entailed for me, man. You're yawning more than me.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I'm just stressed out about life, so.
Aren't we all?
So apparently Happy tells Peter that Fury is going to call him. And Peter does the thing no man has ever dared to before. He sent Fury to voicemail. Dun, dun, dun!
Has anyone ever really sent Fury the voicemail?
I don't know. We don't. Tony probably did. He put Coulson on hold that one time in the first Avengers movie. That was funny. And he also put Ross on hold in Civil War because he likes watching the light blink. But anyway, so Fury is back, obviously, and he's still calling. Oh, Fury's still calling Peter as he's like on the roof overlooking an Iron Man mural. It's not subtle. Basically, I have concluded that Tony Stark is the Stan Lee of the Marvel Cinematic Universe because he's been deified exactly pretty much the same way. You know, ignoring all of the terrible things that Tony has done. Because, you know, building a giant murder bot.
Yep.
I'm not letting that one go. Anyway, so back in their new apartment, Peter has his old suit that Tony gave him, the new shiny suit with the legs. I like that suit that Tony gave him. And he doesn't really want to deal with the suits. He just wants to have a nice, normal vacation because that's what happens to superheroes. They have normal vacations. We finally have a mention of Peter's Spidey sense, which May calls the Peter tingle, which I think goes to one of the big problems in this movie is the idea that, like, it's the concept of Peter Parker is the alter ego to Spider-Man, but here they're pretty much interchangeable, and that I think hurts it a little bit because Spider-Man, Peter has a separate personality slightly when he's Spider-Man. He's bolder, he's slyer, he's funnier, he's quippy. That's something Peter Parker doesn't do. And so I think, and it goes to my general problem, I think, with this Spider-Man, is that they're trying to make him into Tony Stark light, which is great because in some ways, because Peter's brilliant and I like that we get to see his do the smarty thing.
But which we'll talk about later.
Huh?
Which we'll talk about later.
Yes, we'll get there. But also, like, but at the same time, you know, Peter is his own character and he needs to be his own person. He needs to be his own Peter Parker and his own Spider-Man, not in anybody else's shadow. And Tony's shadow is in this entire movie. Jesus, the guy's dead, but he still won't leave this alone. Anyway, so
well, Peter packs, you know, kind of a counterpoint to that, though. And here's the counterpoint. I think no matter what movie kind of came after Endgame, the Shadow was going to be casted regardless.
I think if Captain Marvel 2 came afterwards, there would be significantly less mentions of Tony Stark.
Probably, yes, but there'd still be a Shadow.
Black Panther. Same thing if, you know, this was a Black Widow movie. Like, there might be a couple of offhanded mentions. It could be referenced at the beginning of the movie or in a random scene, but it wouldn't be prevalent throughout the film. And I understand why it is prevalent, but it's just a little too much because it's trying to turn Peter into the next Tony Stark, which is the major theme of this film. It's not Peter's journey necessarily. It's who is the next Tony Stark and who's going to take on this legacy, whatever. Okay. So Peter wants to have nothing to do with the suit or the powers or like the superhero stuff. He just wants a normal vacation and he packs the suitcase. But it's really funny because in the scene where they talk about the Peter tingle, he just kind of throws a banana at him and he doesn't react. And just like hits him in the face. But it should be noted that as Peter closes the suitcase, the initials on the suitcase are Ben Parker. Guys, children, this is as close as we're going to get to actually physically mentioning Ben Parker. Like, for some reason, and I think you and I talked about this in the first, in a Homecoming, that, like, it's okay to mention Ben. Like, I don't understand why they're so meh about it. We don't need the whole recap of how Peter became Spider-Man. We've seen it twice before. But you can mention Ben. You can mention the role Ben played in Peter's life. You can mention him as Peter's father. Like, that's okay. But it seems like these movies are trying to forget about Ben, which in some ways is fine, only to shoehorn daddy issues onto other characters. In Far From Home, in the Homecoming, it was Tony Stark. Here, in some ways, it's Quentin Beck, which is a separate issue entirely. Because I think in the animated series, Mysterio was actually the one responsible for Uncle Ben's death, but anyway, we'll get to that, or in some way responsible, but anyway. So Peter does not take the suit and gets on the plane, but he wants to sit with MJ on the plane. That doesn't work out, and then they're on the plane, and there's a funny moment where Flash is being a jerk in first class, and MJ's like, excuse me, ma'am, he blipped, so he's not 21, and the stewardess is like, I'm just gonna take this. Which that does beg the question of, like, I guess everybody's back to the age they were, so the age they are chronologically doesn't matter anymore. But legally, that's that I would not want to deal with that. Let Jennifer Walters and Daredevil sort that out. I can't. That's let Bernie Rosenthal sort through this mess. She'll handle it. So then you have this kid named Brad, who I guess is technically 5 years younger than them, or was before the blip, and now he's like pure male specimen, and he did not blip. And so through Ned's awkwardness and annoyingnessness, what ends up happening is instead of Peter sitting with MJ, Ned ends up sitting with Betty, and Peter gets squished between the two of the most moronic teachers I have ever seen in my entire life. They are useless.
They're comedy relief.
Barely, but yes. So, let's see. Oh, funny, sad story about one of the teachers. His wife apparently faked being blipped and ran away with, like, her, like, rock climbing dude or hiking buddy or something like that. Like, that's rough, buddy.
Feels out to you, bro.
So as Peter's on the plane, there's, you know, movies on the screen, right? And I actually paused because I really wanted to know what those movies were. They are The Snap, which talks about Thanos. See, The Snap! So why call it The Blip? Anyway, maybe that's the slang term for it. Whatever. Finding Wakanda, Hunting Hydra, and Nova... Einstein Rosen Bridge with Eric Selvig, which is, and then of course there's a documentary about Tony Stark. Hey, Eric Selvig has had it made after the events of Dark World. He's made a comeback because if anybody doesn't remember, he was kind of a loon in Dark World for a bit there.
Yeah, the events of the Avengers really screwed with his brain for a little bit.
Anyway, so things work out for Ned because by the time they arrive in Venice, Ned and Betty are like dating. So much for
being a teenage bachelor in Europe,
right? So they go through passport control, and Peter gets pulled aside, and they open up a suitcase, and his spider suit is there, and Peter's just like, and the woman just like takes out the banana. She goes, "No, have this." Not allowed.
They didn't even care that he had the Spider-Man outfit. They're like, yeah, we don't care.
Like a t-shirt, that could be a fan thing at this point. Anything is possible. But come on, remember baby Peter had like a little helmet and a little arc reactor light thingy?
Yep.
So May packed Peter's spider suit. Go May. Peter's banana is confiscated, and we see literally this entire movie is filled with images and graffiti and everything about Tony Stark. Like, Jesus, we get it. The teachers are dumb, but the music is kind of good as they arrive in their hotel, which is undergoing some renovations. Yeah, there's a cute cat, though. They do some fun tourism thing. The teacher loses his camera. I know the teachers have names. We should probably look those up.
Hold on, I'll get it free in a sec. Give me 1 second.
Thank you. I know they have names, but they are
The black teacher is Mr. Dell, and he's played by J.B. Smoove.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Starr plays Mr. Harrington.
Mr. Harrington. He is the, yes, Mr. Harrington. So his wife is the one that gets blipped, or fake blipped, excuse me. And she, yeah, and then he loses his camera in Venice. It falls in the water because he's a noob. Let's see. But so Peter finds the perfect necklace for MJ.
Wait.
So Peter finds a necklace for MJ, and it does actually resemble the Black Dahlia, I guess. I find it weird that someone is obsessed with a flower because of a murder. As considering that the flower itself is not relevant to the murder directly. Like, yes, the mouth was cut and everything to look like a Dahlia, but like, It's a little strange, but then again, I wrote murder mysteries in high school, so I have no room to talk. So meanwhile, somebody's kind of watching Peter, and we later find out that that is a per- that that's I think it's some. First, it's kind of implied that it's like a SHIELD agent, but I have a theory about that later when we get there. So remind me about the theory with the dude and the creepy watching of the teenagers in Italy. As they're walking, the water starts rumbling and you see little crabs running out and they're so cute. And then of course there's a giant wave monster thing that has a face and the water comes alive. And I'm like, oh look, it's Hydro Man. Ah, it's not. But anyway, they're destroying stuff. Buildings are, you know, being hurled or whatever, and general havoc. Peter is hilarious, especially when he grabs one of the Venetian masks and puts it on. And his entire job is obviously, like, web shooters can't stop a water monster, but he can keep all of the stuff from crumbling, and that's pretty much what he does. And then he just gets wet. So Sunflun flies out to help, and it is a dude that we saw at the beginning of the movie in Mexico with a giant fishbowl on his head.
And everybody loves the giant fishbowl.
So he fights the monster. Peter watches. He keeps you know, the rumbling away, the rubble away from people. And there's a cute moment when he's on the roof and he's like, I can help. I am sticky. And the guy's like, okay, yeah, sure. Go ahead and help me. And Peter just kind of follows him around, stopping everything.
I don't think it was I'm very sticky. It's I'm very strong.
And sticky.
Yeah, and sticky. But I vividly remember strong. More strong. But
oh, I remember the sticky. He says, yeah, he says, I am very strong and sticky. And he's wearing this clownish mask, which is just hilarious. So then Peter's in this, like, bell tower. And as, you know, the water monster and Mysterio are fighting, Peter keeps trying to keep the tower together. Then he gets hit by the bell in the tower multiple times. And then the tower eventually just falls. That I feel bad for Peter. Like, he tried so hard. Mysterio also gets smacked around, though bear in mind he's not going by this name yet. There's some good comebacks while Peter saves lives. Mysterio leaves. And, like, is this aliens? That is the question. So what's interesting is the next scene is they're back at the hotel and there's a news report about it. And our favorite moron, Flash Thompson, is like, so there's a BuzzFeed article about this guy named Morris Beck.
Quentin Beck.
No, we're not there yet.
Oh.
It's a Hydro Man reference. This is that a guy named Morris Bench was like, something to, got water powers, which is an actual reference to Hydro Man, who is a Spider-Man villain, which is kind of weird, but yes. We also find out, in case anybody forgotten, that Flash is a giant Spider-Man fanboy. Like, Spider-Man is his favorite superhero ever. And then Peter walks in, he's like, what's up, dickwad? If only Flash knew. Actually, it's probably a good thing that he doesn't know, but imagine his face when he finds out.
Well, yeah, it would be horrible if he knew, because he's the one who can't keep his mouth shut. And it's funny because you'd always think that it'd be Ned that couldn't keep his mouth shut, but Ned has actually done a pretty good job of keeping his mouth shut about it.
This is true.
Yep.
Anyway, so the teachers are of course useless, and the other teacher who's is like, not the one his wife left him, the other one. Who's like, I know what it is. It's witches. I'm like, are you a science teacher or not? Like, witches? Witches. So basically the news report states that there's this guy who is mysterious and the kids coined the term Mysterio. Basically Aunt May was right to pack the suit. We love Aunt May. Peter calls May. She's like, aren't you glad I packed the suit? Peter's like, no. Happy's there with Aunt May. So the gang is going to go to Paris tomorrow. That's the original plan. And Peter's got everything Happy. He's excited that the Eiffel Tower and MJ or Michelle or whatever. Ned kind of starts getting worried. And so they go back to their room and Ned follows Peter inside and he gets shot with a Trank dart by Fury. And Fury's been looking for Peter, and Peter's been dodging his calls, and Fury's a bit lost. He's a little bit mad, and he's just, like, slightly out of character. Like, I noticed this my first watch through. Like, he still sounds like Nick Fury, he still looks like Nick Fury, but there's just something just not quite right about him. And we find out later why. But that's just something I noticed. Like, it's really obvious if you go back and watch, like, Avengers or you know, Iron Man 2 or, like, any other, or even Winter Soldier. It's a very, it's different. And it's very subtle. And kudos to Samuel Jackson for his acting chops in this. Okay. So, let's see. So, Fury tells him about the cyclone monster in Mexico that it had to face. There was a village in Morocco, which is another world event. And Peter basically suits up and goes, oh, and Fury gives him Stark's cool glasses, basically. And Peter is taken to an underground base. We see a dude named Dimitri. We see Maria Hill. And we see a guy named Mr. Beck, a.k.a. Mysterio. Played by Jake Gyllenhaal. So Quentin Beck claim, honestly, never in Marvel Comics, do not trust guys named Quentin. Like, just don't do it. Claims to be from another Earth, and he says that this is her 616, and Beck's Earth is 833. Now, for you non-comic book nerds, 616 is actually the, first of all, we saw 616 in Endgame. That was the name of Scott's storage unit. But 616 is the number that the mainstream Marvel comic book universe takes place. The cinematic universe actually has a different number, but we'll forgive them for this because it's a reference and whatnot. So Peter is geeking out over the confirmation of the multiverse theory. And basically there are these bad guys who are elementals and they destroyed his world. And you know, even knowing what I know about the multiverse and all that jazz, like, this just seems a little bit fishy to me. And I can't put my finger on why. Why does this sound so fishy? Oh, I know why. Because you don't trust guys named Mysterio. Seriously, watch the 90s Spider-Man. So Peter needs to go to Prague. That's where they think the next elemental will arrive or whatever. And Peter's like, I can go to Prague. Like, I have all these blah, blah, blah. And he starts giving this, like, long speech. And Fury just goes, bitch, you've been to space. So Peter's like, well, why can't Thor do it? And Fury's like, he's off world. And what about Doctor Strange? And he's like, he's unavailable. And Captain Marvel. And Fury's like, do not invoke her name. And I thought that was a really weird line for Fury to say. I'm like, why can't he just say that she's on another planet, like Thor it or whatever? Like, this was a very specific choice of words. Let us remember
this. It's almost like they're planting the seeds for Captain Marvel 2.
I mean, duh.
Foreshadowing.
Not the point though. And anyway, Fury says, don't invoke her name. And it's just like, the way that he says it, I'm like, why would that be a problem? He just fought a battle with her. She was really nice to him. Like, that's weird. Anyway, so would May kill him for leaving the class trip with Fury to save the world? Sweetheart, no, she wouldn't. Aunt May is fully on board with the superheroics. She packed this suit for you for a reason. But then Peter actually adds some logic to this, that, like, people can't see him as Spider-Man in Europe because it'll make everybody in this class suspicious that, you know, if Peter disappears and Spider-Man shows up and they're all in the same place, it's just a little suspicious. It's Peter's secret identity needs to be protected. Fury says, okay. And Dimitri takes him back to the hotel. The next morning, the teachers announce that they've been upgraded by their tour company and they're going to Prague. What a coincidence!
And that's like, what's going on here? And Peter goes, we're having our vacation hijacked by Fury.
Yep. And so there's a new fancy tour bus, and Peter and Dimitri is the driver. So they're driving through Austria, and it's like really pretty scenery. Peter decides to, he's Googling romantic spots in Prague, but then he decides to put on the shades.
Which was given to him by Fury when he
went. Yes. And so he meets Edith, who is the, man, Tony has the thing with AIs. Like, I'm not even kidding. Jarvis, Friday.
Wednesday.
Well, I don't think there was a Wednesday, but yeah.
I think there was a Wednesday briefly.
Whatever. So then we have Edith. And she has access to Tony's protocols, major tech, satellite hookups. Then we see Ned and Betty texting each other and being there and silly teenagers. So they stop for gas and bathrooms, and Peter gets, Dimitri kind of routes him to the pub where he gets a new suit. And there's this like scary looking Austrian lady, like blonde Austrian lady, who tells him to put on the suits. And she's like, here's your new suit, put it on. He's like, right here, right now. She's like, yes, put it on. And as he's putting on the suit, Brad walks in and takes a photo. And he's like, oh, I'm going to have to tell MJ, yada, yada, yada. And like, from Brad's perspective, it's a little weird that he'd be getting, taking his pants off in front of a hot, you know, German and Austrian woman.
If I was Brad and I walked in, I'd go, oh, it's a very beautiful Austrian woman. Right. Good day, sir.
They're both interested in the same girl, so yeah. It's not that simple. And
nothing's ever that simple.
Right. So Brad has this picture, and he's going to send it to MJ. So Peter tries to delete the photo and off of his phone and accidentally orders a drone strike on Brad. Whoops!
Unfortunately for Peter, he just doesn't do well with tech under pressure.
He needs to just, like, yeah, but Peter's, like, just not that good under pressure. He's still a baby.
Yeah, like, a baby. Well, I mean, if you think about it, like, when you go back to Homecoming and he's trying to learn the stuff on the fly and he's trying to catch those guys, you know, in the act, like, the tech, like, he just can't handle the tech legitimately when under pressure that way. And, like, him
didn't really bother to, like, study the manual, quote-unquote, after the you know, what was it? The
gas station.
Field protocol.
Yeah, and then the other thing was is that, like, when he gets Edith, he should have done that, like, quietly, like, in his room and not on the bus. Because if he was on the bus and he's wearing the glasses, after at least playing around with it in his room, he could have at least gone, you know, can you just delete the picture? Like, don't kill the guy. Just delete the picture.
Well, and she used the word, I think, terminate, and that can mean a lot of different things, I guess. But anyway, so...
Yes, I'm okay with you terminating the photo, but not the human being.
Peter wasn't specific enough. Anyway, so Peter saves the bus. It's fine. They get to this really nice hotel, and there's a light show, and Ned is kind of, meh. And then, so Peter goes to meet with, Beck seems to be intuitive, and he, like, seems to know a lot more than he realistically would, and they hatch a plan. Beck helps Peter, gives him some advice after, like, Fury yells at him, about, like, one, but, like, it's okay that you want a normal life, and blah, 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 and the kids end up, because they need to stay inside, because this elemental is going to show up, they need a way to keep the kids inside. So what is the most obviously boring thing you could make children do during a light festival in Prague? Take them to the opera.
Good luck.
Right? And so Peter goes with them, and MJ's like, oh, there's a cute moment with MJ. And then, like, Peter sneaks away really quickly. And
Brad MJ gives him the finger.
Him. Yeah, MJ follows him. And then Ned and Betty do too. And so the suit's a little tight around the little web shooter. And MJ looks for Peter. Betty and Ned go on the Ferris wheel just as the lava monster shows up.
Because they stupid.
Well, how were they, right? Ned doesn't really try to stop her nearly as much as he could. But then anyway, they get stuck on the Ferris wheel around this lava monster. And it's really funny. But he's like, oh my God, is that Spider-Man? And Ned's like, no, no, that can't be Spider-Man. That's that's a new guy. It's a European knockoff. I'm like, that's clever.
Like, wasn't it like Iron Monkey or something like that?
The Night Monkey.
Oh, the Night Monkey, yeah.
It's a European version. Ned read all about it online because everything on the internet is true. So Betty and Ned are still stuck on the Ferris wheel as the Night Monkey. Like, I know he was under pressure, but like something slightly better would have worked too, but fine. He's got like this cool noir suit. It could have been better, but whatever. There's a decent fight, and Peter accidentally grabs onto something and flings it without realizing what it is. And it lands right where MJ is. Then we see Fury's car, and what's interesting is that something hits Fury's car, but the only thing that happens is the windows, like, crack a little bit. So that's really interesting. Back, like, sacrifices himself to defeat the monster. It works out. He's fine. Betty and Ned are saved. Fury talks about the need to be vigilant and invites Beck to come with them to Berlin. Fury needs Peter to be an Avenger, just like Stark, yada yada. And then Peter's not good under pressure, but him and Beck decide to go out for a drink. And Peter's like, I'm not over 21. So Beck asks Peter what he wants. And Peter wants a normal life. He just wants to have that one vacation with his friends, which after everything that happened in Endgame, I don't blame him. Like,
well not just Endgame, but Infinity War too. Like, that whole saga for him.
Right. Like, this poor baby has been through a lot. And even, like, he's the only character that, like, actually felt physically what was happening to him because of the Spidey sense. So, when he wakes up...
Well, I think a minor argument could be made for Doctor Strange. Because Doctor Strange... And maybe even Drax and Mantis... No, Mantis definitely could have, because she felt something.
That's fair. And then Wanda, because of how she like leans into it.
Yeah, and then also you could probably say Quill, because he goes like, oh man, because like he knows it's coming.
Yeah, but that's not nearly the same reaction as understanding what's happening to you.
Yeah, kind of like the way Mantis, Doctor Strange,
I think Mantis, Wanda. Doctor Strange, Peter, and Wanda, but for different reasons. And anyway, so I can understand Peter wanting a normal life, and they're kind of hinting at the whole great power, great responsibility thing, but we, for some reason, aren't allowed to say it. I don't really get why, but whatever. So they have a nice talk, and basically they talk about the glasses, and Peter offers them to Beck to try them on, and they look better on, and Beck's like, oh, they look better on you, Peter. And they do look actually better on Peter. And Peter thinks that an adult that like, so then there was a note with the glasses, and Peter thinks that like it was up to him to choose the next Iron Man, not that he should be the next Iron Man or Tony Stark or whatever. So he gives Beck the glasses and reappropriates them to his commands or whatever, and Peter leaves. And as right after Peter leaves, the illusion disappears, and we find out that everything is fake. And there's other people in the room. Like, the most of the people were fake, but there's still a significant amount of people who were in that bar who were real. And Beck decides to villain monologue for us, and we find out that he's a former Stark employee who developed the neurotherapy machine thing from Civil War. But there's a couple of other Easter eggs here. We see the guy from the first Iron Man movie who was working under Obadiah, which was kind of interesting.
And it was a nice little thing to see, you know, Obadiah Stane come back for that brief little cameo to yell at him, of all things.
I don't think it was, I think it's just the same footage from Iron Man.
I'm pretty sure, actually, I think it might have been slightly reshot footage, but maybe same audio.
Could have been a different angle, but anyway.
Yeah. You never know what angles they may have shot that never made it in and that they could just repurpose, so.
Yeah, so it's revealed that Beck built this barf machine that we see Tony do at the at the beginning of Iron Man 1, Civil War. And then we find out that Beck got fired for being, you know, a little insane. And, you know, I know the Starks and the Pyms have a history of just, like, firing people they don't like, but, yeah, I'm gonna be with Tony on this one, and I never side with Tony, but, like, Beck's a little unstable.
And not only that, but if you also now notice a trend, if you start all the way from Iron Man 1 to now, you've had Obadiah Stane, Whiplash, Ultron, Quentin Beck, you know, you have, like, a whole bunch of villains throughout this entire Infinity Saga that are tied in directly to Tony Stark in one shape or another.
Anyway. So,
it's true, though. You know it.
I'm not arguing. So we have the... Basically, what they did was they used weaponized drones with satellite spoofing to fool Fury sensors and projections and, like, other things to basically make all of the illusions look real. And we also see the guy that was watching Peter earlier, who was also, like, one of the, you know, exasperated former Stark employees or whatever. So basically, this is a conglomerate of everybody that is bitter and hateful of Tony Stark coming together. And instead of forming a support group or, you know, moving on like adults, the thing is like, Beck's goals are clear. He wants to be the next Tony Stark, the next Iron Man, the big superhero. What exactly does this mean for the rest of them? That he's going to start his own, like, industry and they're all going to be employees? But whatever. He calls Stark a boozy man-child, which I agree with that. That's a fair criticism. And it's a decent villain monologue. Meanwhile, Peter goes back to the hotel and tells MJ that he got lost, and Peter invites MJ to do something fun with him. And they leave the hotel, and they walk around, and they're on the bridge, and Peter tries to tell MJ that he likes her, but she's like, oh, you're telling me that you're Spider-Man. He's like, and in, like, typical nerdy Peter fashion, like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not Spider-Man. And,
not Spider-Man? I am Groot.
But MJ figured it out. She was, like, 60% sure. 67% sure, something like that.
I like how she still gave a decent amount of percentage of where Peter could not be Spider-Man. I like that.
Peter's just a terrible liar. Like, if he's not wearing the mask, like, one of the things that it's really interesting when it comes to Peter and Spider-Man is that, in a way, they're two different people. Peter is the nerdy, awkward kid, and Spider-Man is the, you know, for the most part, a confident, snarky superhero who invented the quip, in my opinion. The proper superhero, supervillain banter that we know and love, like, that is peak Spider-Man. But anyway, so MJ saved the thing that was flung towards her by Peter earlier during that fight, and we see a smoke monster. It's, like, covered, and it's covered in webs. So she deduces that Spider-Man is in Europe. So the Night Monkey, she tells Peter, like, why is the Night Monkey using web shooters? So kudos to her for some excellent detective work. But Peter's not quite as, his reaction is like, wait, does this mean MJ wasn't actually interested in Peter? She was just watching him to see if he was Spider-Man. But during this moment, the projector activates, and it flashes that smoke monster. And MJ and Peter deduce that the elementals are fake and that Beck did it. So Peter tells MJ the truth. She takes it pretty well. Meanwhile, Beck is rehearsing with Edith and that they can create something big enough to cover the entire city because now they have access to Stark's satellite. And that Edith will create something big with maximum damage. And one of the people that work for Beck, they're like, well, there'll be casualties. And he's like, well, yeah. And then they realize that he has, like, a projected suit. And as he's waving his arm around, he notices that there's a glitch. And he's like, yeah, one of the drones came back damaged. And Beck now has to go and kill Peter. And he threatens William in the process.
Poor William.
Peter casually changing into his costume right in front of MJ was kind of funny because he's like, oh, wait a minute, there's a girl here. And May, he gets Ned to call May to say that he's going to be staying with family in Germany. Family in Germany. So that he can get to Berlin and meet with Fury. Peter goes to Berlin, but it's interesting that it's never quite, I guess Beck was probably in Berlin and he figured that the first place Peter would go was Berlin, which is because that's where Fury told him he was going to be. But, So Peter arrives in Berlin and he's just automatically picked up by Fury at the train station. How did Fury know Peter was coming? Like, Fury knows everything, but there's usually explanation for how he knows things.
We'll get an explanation.
Yes, the explanation that, of course, this is all an illusion. And Peter actually starts, when he arrives in the fake building, Peter hears kind of like the woo-woo-woo-woo kind of sound of the drones. And he realizes this is an illusion. But he gets overwhelmed by the illusion because he's not expecting it. And he's not, like, it's a completely different type of illusion from the ones we saw earlier. Whereas, like, Peter's own fears are coming to life. And it's really hard to tell what's real and what's fake. And then at one point it appears that Fury shot back. But this is also not Fury. It's also an illusion. And Peter gets hit by a train. And... yeah. And Beck reroutes Peter's friends to fly out of London. So Peter passes out, and he wakes up in the Netherlands in a prison cell with some really nice guys. And Peter escapes, but it's really funny because he just like opens the thing and escapes. And the cop who's supposed to be the guard or something, they tell him, he's like, oh, he's on the phone with his wife. She's pregnant and they're so happy for him. And the guard's like, hey, are you guys okay? Well, Peter has snuck out and they just close the door. They're like, yeah, we're fine. Really nice people. So Peter.
Oh, they get even nicer in a moment.
Yeah. So Peter goes out of the building to the market and he borrows some dude's cell phone who just happily gives him the phone so he can call Happy, I guess. And he calls for a ride. Happy arrives on a really cool looking jet that I'm really going to miss. And Peter's a little injured and he's like, wait, how do I know you're real? And it's a really nice moment between Peter and Happy.
Especially the fact that, like, you know, Peter really needed the validation that it was really Happy, because what he has been through now for like the last, like, maybe 24 hours. Maybe a bit longer.
12 hours, I would say. Well, it's like, hold on. From Prague to Germany, it's like a 6-hour train ride? Maybe, I don't know.
That's not the thing, though. The thing, though, is that they learned about it over in Prague one night, and then during the day, they do the other thing. So you're looking really at more about 24 hours.
Not necessarily.
Maybe.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Whatever. Peter's had a day.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they get on board. Peter is freaking out as, like, Happy's, like, stitching him up a little bit. And he thinks he messed up. He misses Tony. And I'm also, like, totally game for a techie Peter. I like techie Peter. But Happy offers some words of wisdom, and we realize that Peter needs a new suit. While they go to, and Happy asks, like, where are we going? We're going to London. And Peter, there's like a lab in the back of the plane that Peter can just use. And Happy turns it on. He's like, I'll put on some music. Because he watches Peter start tinkering a little bit.
And it made him, it reminded him of Tony. And it gave him that pride. And then he starts playing AC/DC. And Peter goes,
I love Led Zeppelin.
Which, by the way, was that today? Of time of recording? Hold on.
Where are you going with us?
So apparently like a lead singer of a band passed away at the day of recording today. And I think it was the co-founder of either Led Zeppelin or Van Halen. One of the two.
No.
Yeah, it was Peter Green.
No. Oh. All right, back to the review. So as Peter's making the new suit, we see Nick in, I guess now London, and he's talking about Kree sleeper cells with top secret information. Why would Nick Fury be talking about Kree sleeper cells with secret information? And secret information about what exactly? Well, we'll find out. So they know they need... Oh, this is how they figure out they need to go to London. So they get the kids arrive in London. They get a bus tour of London, and the driver is the guy that works for Beck. There's a lot of drones. They actually... It's like releasing the Kraken, and they reach the satellite, and there's a shit ton of drones just like coming down to Earth. There's like... It's a lot of drones. Happy calls Fury and mentions something about a surfboard to try to get them to understand that appearances can be deceiving. And Peter talks about how he's going to be able to see the illusions because he has the Spidey sense. And Happy's like, I thought that wasn't working right. Well, it's going to have to work right because there's no other option. Anyway, so Beck claims that all of the elementals have somehow like joined together, but like how did they do that if they were all defeated previously? So that doesn't really make any sense, but whatever, Beck, your writers need some work. Funny enough, the guy who drives the bus is actually the script guy. I mean, he'd have a really nice career in Hollywood, but here... Mm-mm. So the kids get off the bus with the teachers, and the teacher's like, oh my god, they're all coming together like in Power Rangers, and the other teacher goes, you mean Voltron? All right, those are solid references. We'll give it to you. So Mysterio arrives. And
well, actually, there's also a Power Rangers reference, too.
I literally just said that before I said Voltron.
Yeah. Yeah, they're saying, like, it's like, oh, it transforms into Voltron. I'm like, you mean the Megazord?
No, they're all coming together, like in Power Rangers. And the other teacher's like, you mean Voltron? I mean, so... Peter drops in with a parachute inside the illusion, which was really cool. Fury picks up on the bullshit, and Peter gets inside. There's like it's like a swarm of drones, and Maria gets on the roof to see what's going on, and it looks like there's like a giant cloud that is literally about to destroy London. London's had it too good for too long. It's like, when's the last time anything happened in London? Oh, wait, that was Thor Dark World! So Peter starts destroying the drones with his webs, and Beck sees inside. And what's really cool is Peter programmed electric webs. So he webbed up all of the drones that he could and then set it off, and they all got electrocuted, which was awesome. Beck cancels the illusion, and one of the guys in the back was like, William was like, how are you going to explain this? And they're like, eh, later.
So real quick, minor edit to what I said earlier, Peter Green was the co-founder of Fleetwood Mac. So I was kind of off on that one.
Okay, still sad, but I'm glad Led Zeppelin and Van Halen are safe.
And not only that, but also today of recording is also the day that Regis Philbin died.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So. That I saw.
Okay, back to Spider-Man.
Peter fights the drones. Oh, Happy's plane gets destroyed. It's very sad. Peter fights the drones. There's other drones that go after his classmates, and they run into, I guess, the museum that's attached to the bridge or something where the crown jewels are. Beck is literally destroying history. Not cool, but it's funny because MJ grabs a mace and they like take down one of the drones, but there's another one, and then they run inside the vault, which is like super reinforced, obviously. And Happy tries to throw a shield, and he's like, how does Cap do that? There's a lot of drones. Then Peter gets hit with a sonic boom. Then he falls in the water. And then Peter's out of webs while Beck asks for his suit. This is really important, but like, why does he need his suit? Because we actually never see him wear the suit. So we'll see.
Well, no, we've seen him wear the suit once, and that was in the bar with Peter when Peter hands her the glasses.
I'm saying during this entire time, we see a projection of Beck while he's running the illusion from a bridge, and he's wearing like the, you know,
the CGI suit.
Yeah.
And anyway, I think the big reason for that is because he didn't actually expect Peter to show up.
This is true. But we'll get to that. So he says he's still going to need the suit. Flash helps Spider-Man with his video. So Happy tells them that the reason that that Spider-Man found them, because Happy's like, I work for Spider-Man, is because of the fact that Flash has been live streaming the entire vacation. And that's how they figured out where they were. And that they were in London.
And he wasn't working for Spider-Man. He was working with Spider-Man.
Sure, we'll go with that. I'm sure that's how Happy sees it.
Oh, that's definitely how Happy sees it.
So anyway, they're in the vault and the drone's about to break in and they start having this moment of they're all confessing things. And Happy's like, I'm in love with Spider-Man's aunt. And I'm like, Happy, you cannot say that. You cannot say that. But fine. He said it. They're probably not going to think much of it because maybe Spider-Man has like two aunts or three aunts, whatever.
Fine. Although Ned and MJ probably look at him going like, we know who.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, you know, Happy's still a better choice than Doc Ock. So, you know. Peter tosses stuff at drones, gets to Beck, and in that little bridge tunnel. Peter wants the glasses back, and Peter gets swarmed with another illusion, and he just Spidey senses his way through it, and it's so epic. It's so good. This is the Spider-Man I love. Beck orders all the drones to fire. Beck gets shot, and he's still a jerk. He gives Peter the glasses as Peter takes out a clocked drone. But the clock drone is actually revealed to be the real Beck. And Peter takes the glasses. All the drones leave. And Beck dies. And all illusions are officially down. And he's like, it's something like terminate everything. It's some like terminate.
Terminate
the program.
Well, no. What you hear is that you hear Edith go, are you sure you want to terminate the program? And Peter's going, yes, terminate the program.
End it all.
Yeah, end it all.
So Peter takes the glasses, all the drones leave, Beck dies, and the illusion is completely down. The kids are safe, and MJ runs off. She and Peter reunite, they hug, they kiss, they're super cute. Happy did indeed give her the necklace, and MJ kisses him, she loves it, even though it got a little dinged. And MJ lied about it all being about Spider-Man. They kiss again. Peter has to go now, and MJ goes back to the class. The next scene we see is Happy talks to May, and then we see Nick and Maria, and Nick was like, oh, I had doubts about Beck from the beginning. And Maria's like, no, he didn't. Maria's like, nope. And Happy says he'll call him. That Spider-Man will call Fury if he needs him. Peter and MJ, and now we're kind of back home, we're at the airport, and Peter and MJ hang out together now. Ned and Betty broke up, whatever, because their relationship was so important to literally anything. May picks up Peter at the airport. Where are your bags? Oh, right, they got blown up. And, like, I guess Ned took Peter's bags with him, so they were all on that bus that got blown up by the drones. So then the next scene is Peter talks about the importance of the truth. And Happy and May are talking about their relationship. Is it something serious? Is it a summer fling? And they're clearly not on the same page, but they could be. And it's just really funny. And Peter's like, I'm going to go now to my date with MJ. And Peter is, he takes a Spidey selfie. And he also gets a text from MJ that says, don't text and swing, which was really funny. Peter meets MJ downtown. I think it's actually in front of, for those that have actually been to New York, he meets her in front of Penn Station. And they go swinging. And she doesn't handle it well, which is really funny because this is realistically how it would go. Because in previous iterations from the first Spider-Man, where we see MJ just like flying with a mannequin, versus other movies and other animation, it seems a lot more romantic than it actually would be in real life. And that's where the movie ends. But wait, there's more. Peter puts MJ down in front of Penn. Oh, sorry, he puts her down in front of Penn Station.
Yeah, because I was about to say, because when he puts her down, like, that's Madison Square Garden, Penn Station, right there. Because they use the monitors of at Madison Square Garden and stuff.
Yes. So MJ tells Peter that she's never doing that again. Which, like, I'm not afraid of heights, but I don't blame her. And just as there's a breaking news report and a video of Beck before his death, and basically the way Beck
frames- Who is it first that introduces it?
No, I'm not there yet. First, there's a news report.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's, like, a scene of Beck, and then it's like, Beck blames everything that happened basically on Peter and on Spider-Man and Tony Stark. And now, and then the newscaster says this was first reported by the controversial news website, the DailyBugle.net. And then we see
J.K. Simmons as...
J.K. Simmons!
So yeah, J.K. Simmons.
J.K. Simmons. First of all, this is like the most like iconic character. First, J. Jonah Jameson himself is like one of the most iconic Spider-Man characters out there. But J.K. Simmons played him in the original Sam Raimi trilogy. And to have him back is just epic. But I have one gripe with this that I'll get to after we finish the scene.
The hair?
So, Peter... And then the final scene is, it is revealed that Beck leaks Peter's identity and says, oh, Spider-Man is actually Peter Parker. And not only does he see Peter Parker, they flash his freaking picture. And it is just Peter holding his head going, what the? And then it clears. And it goes to the credits. So I love this scene. And the I hope there's a way to reverse the implications of this, because Peter cannot have a secret identity out there. But
well, not only that, but there's also a nice little Easter egg to the way that ended too. And that was the fact that how did Spider-Man Homecoming end?
Was Aunt May finding Peter in his costume going the same thing? Yes.
Yeah.
But there, I have one gripe with this scene, and that's the fact that J. Jonah Jameson is essentially kind of seems to be like the InfoWars guy.
Oh, Alex Jones?
Well, yeah, it's kind of like similar setup, but I have gripes with that because... Although J. Jonah Jameson in a lot of iterations is, you know, the guy that hates Spider-Man and prints, you know, fake news about Spider-Man, he's still a respected journalist. He still covers good stories. What's his name? From Daredevil works for him. Ben Urich works for him. You know, there's so many good reporters that he has on staff that, like, I feel like making him into the InfoWars guy does a disservice to all of the people that have worked under the Daily Bugle.
Well, I don't know what they're aiming for in a way for it, but, you know, you gotta bring, I think they're bringing a little bit of what we realistically also get in today's day and age a little bit.
As someone who does media monitoring, I can tell you that every newspaper and every publication has printed some sort of fake news on an almost daily basis. But that's, you know, but because, you know, every news source has a bias. Every news source has their own, you know, they're trying to reach a specific audiences and all that jazz. So I don't know. It feels a little bit unfair because I've also read amazing issues of, you know, not necessarily Spider-Man, but like Young Avengers and other things where J. Jonah Jameson is actually like a really awesome, complex character that kind of deserves better. So hopefully they'll do more with him in the future alleged Spider-Man 3.
And that's the thing. It's like they're utilizing what we see legitimately today with like the TMZs and the InfoWars and all this other stuff. And I think they're using that as a buildup, but who knows what they have planned for when they do Spider-Man 3. Keep in mind, they're already plotting how to do Spider-Man 3. We'll talk about the one more scene that we have coming up.
I still think it's
and then we'll talk to... about and then we'll talk about the drama that ensued after the release of this film.
We'll get to that, but I will say that like I think J. Jonah Jameson deserves a little bit better. And again, But not even J. Jonah Jameson. I think the Daily Bugle deserves better because it is a legit news source. And, like, I know what you're saying. I don't disagree with it. I'm just still annoyed. But that's just how it is right now.
But you know what, though? It did two things, though. It brought J.K. Simmons back as J. Jonah Jameson, number one. And number two, it got people talking.
This is true.
And those are the two more important things. It's not about how he was portrayed and stuff like that. It was about the fact that he came back and it got people talking.
But I'm still going to be annoyed about it. Anyway, so the second after credit scene is Fury and Maria Hill listening to what I would never pick Fury to listen to in terms of music. And we see that actually they're not Maria and Fury. It's actually Talos.
And his wife.
And his wife is annoyed with him. And Talos gave the glasses to Peter just as Fury ordered, and that he needs to, and that they're calling Fury, and they're like, you need to tell him what happened. And Talos is like, it's fine, I handled it.
It was more like when they switched back to their normal bodies, Talos is like, well, that went okay. And his wife is obviously like, no, it didn't.
But they call Fury and they're like, okay, so we gave the glasses to Peter like he wanted, but we need you to come back. And we see Fury's on a beach, but then the screen kind of, the camera pulls back and the beach scene disappears to show that he's on a ship.
He's with the Kree, or the Skrulls.
He's with us. We're not sure, actually, because we don't actually see anybody walking by. We might see one Skrull walking by.
Yeah, we see a few walk by.
It's kind of hard to discern exactly who it is and what the ship is, but it would make sense that it'd be on a Skrull ship from what we know of Captain Marvel. And so Fury's on this fake beach, and he doesn't really have shoes, and he just kind of says, okay, back to work. And then the last thing we see is a little plaque that says dedicated to Stan Lee and Steve Ditko, which, like, yes, thank you for acknowledging Steve Ditko because he is the Spider-Man artist. Like, come on.
Well, see, the thing is, though, is that, like, if you actually look at the credits for every Spider-Man movie and stuff like that, they credit both. They've never have not credited Steve Ditko.
I know, but I think it still warrants a mention and a repeat because everybody knows Stan Lee, but very few people know Steve Ditko, or the fact that Steve Ditko actually left Marvel because of issues with Stan Lee. So overall, this really is Daddy Issues 2, the movie, because now it seems like Peter is almost desperate for a father figure, and he looks for it in, like, he saw it in Tony, he sort of saw it in Beck, which is why I think the ultimate, like, realization that he's a fake was even more, but because, like, I'll give Beck credit, he was doing it for his own nefarious purposes, but he listened to Peter and, like, gave him advice. It was bad advice in some certain ways, but he listened and he claimed to understand Peter's perspective.
I think that's where hopefully where number three goes, where, you know, you know he sees the father figure in Tony. He's trying to find his way post Tony now, and then when we get to Spider-Man 3, that's the culmination of when he becomes a man of himself, not desperately needing, like, that father figure, someone like that he has to look up to because he can draw inspiration from within himself.
So here's what I need from Spider. So this is the other thing. The MJ is significantly more interesting in this movie than she was in the first one.
And I think that was on purpose.
I would hope so, because she was boring and pointless in the first one. And I said this in my initial review, that, like, you could have cut her out of the movie and it wouldn't have changed anything. Here, she has a more distinct personality. She's not just that weirdo girl that took another character's nickname. I actually really like her in this movie. And I think that, like, you know, her and Peter had actual chemistry that we didn't really see in the first film. So kudos, that was great. Here's what I need from a third Spider-Man film. I need Peter to acknowledge Uncle Ben. Like, I want to hear the words Uncle Ben in the movie. It is okay to say Uncle Ben. Okay? I need a photo of him or a flashback of him, like, giving Peter advice. Or, you know, maybe they use the flashback as a way to show Uncle Ben, but also introduce the next villain we're going to get, whoever that is. Give me the Hobgoblin. I miss some goblin antics. But yeah, that is my wish list. Oh, no more Ned. That's not going to happen. But, like, no more Ned. Like, stop.
He's the man in the chair.
Peter doesn't need a man in the chair. He has Edith. He has Fred. Like, Peter does not need a man in the chair. He really doesn't. Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is a solo superhero. And I think we need a little bit more of that solo-ness. I'm interested to see where they take Spider-Man 3, given what we just saw in Far From Home. But yeah, those are my thoughts. That is my wish list.
Yep. As for the film itself, it clocked in at 2 hours and 9 minutes and is a 7.5 out of 10 score on IMDb.
Is it higher or lower than its predecessor?
That is a great question. Let me go back in the IMDb real quick.
Because as a movie, I think the first Spider-Man was a little bit better. Especially if you cut out Tony Stark from it. But I like the fact that Tony's not in this one.
Homecoming was a 7.4.
Okay, so it did a little bit better than Homecoming.
Yep.
Also, like, what is the home-related title that Spider-Man 3 is going to have? Spider-Man Homework? Spider-Man Homeward Bound? Spider-Man Take Me Home Country Road? Like, what is it going to be? But I like the fact that Tony was mentioned but was not actually in this movie. Not in a flashback, not in a projection, just, like, a photo here and there, a mention. He did show up in the flashback. Which was understandable because Beck was cranky about his barf machine. And, like, I know the acronym was stupid, but he took your technology and created something that could actually help people deal with trauma. So, like, come on. Yes, limitless possibilities. And Tony took those limitless possibilities and helped it to help people instead of just to prop up your ego back. Whatever. But
it also ended up becoming like a full team of people who just had an axe to grind against Tony.
Right.
Although the one guy, William, his axe really shouldn't have been against Tony. It should have been more against Obadiah Stane, because Obadiah Stane was the one who was the real asshole to him, not Tony Stark.
But I think it's implied that because, like, Tony stopped making weapons, it led to him losing his job as well as Obadiah. But you're right. His gripe should have been with Obadiah. And it's also, like, I mentioned it earlier, it's kind of unclear why exactly all of, like, what exactly was the end game? Because we know what Beck's end game was. He wanted to be the next Tony Stark, the next Iron Man. But that only goes so far until there's an actual legit universe-threatening event.
Yeah.
Because, granted, though, that just implies how stupid Beck's logic was. But then maybe he decides, like, oh, I defeated the Elementals and saved this world. I'm going to retire now and, you know, build a new technologically advanced, you know, company or whatever. But it's not quite as clear what the others get out of it. But I'm excited for Spider-Man 3 whenever that movie happens.
In 16 years because of COVID.
I don't think it's going to be that long.
I know. It's a joke. Well, I mean, you got to look at what Disney's announced. The two Star Wars films have been pushed back a year. Mulan has been postponed indefinitely.
All movies I had zero interest in, so.
I was really excited about Mulan.
Because
number one, Donnie Yen is in the film.
I mean, fair, but, like, China already made a really good historically, not that I'm defending anything China does, but China did make a really good Mulan film that was based, like, very historically tight, as far as I understand, and that was, like, phenomenal.
And so, that's what Disney went for on this one instead of the song
really
and
obvious,
dance.
But yeah. It's, again, I hate the Disney live actions. They're all terrible. They're terrible in different degrees, but they are all terrible.
I think, well, Aladdin was actually good.
Okay, but like, if all of them are garbage, doing slightly better than garbage doesn't say anything.
Well, see, I won't see Lion King because that's not live action film. That's just a CGI movie. I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast. I haven't seen the live action Beauty and the Beast yet, so I'm going to reserve comment for that. I have seen Aladdin, and I actually do enjoy Aladdin. I think Aladdin was a good movie.
Aladdin was decent, not without problems, but it's definitely, I would say, the best out of the live actions. The only one I haven't seen is Dumbo, but like I never liked Dumbo as a kid. So
I actually watched Dumbo, but I was distracted working on stuff at the time, so I need to go back and watch it later. So I want to give it a fair shake on that. But Mulan is just, I think Mulan will be able, because it's not going to be like mythological and all this stuff that would need CGI and stuff, that it's more of a grounded real life film based off of the true events. I think this one actually has
Disney.
I think this has the potential to be the best of all the live actions of their animated films.
This is true, and I will probably see it when it comes out. That does not necessarily mean they should have made it in the first place. Because there's movies that could really do well with a live action remake, and there's movies, like, you don't remake the classics. That is, like, rule number one. But, you know, Disney thinks they're smarter than everybody else. But anyway.
But coming up next, for us on Nerdy Notions, we're taking a break.
Yes. We have worked long and hard and suffered through many Marvel tales. The good and the... Yeah, we're still talking about Thor: Dark World. We're definitely taking a break, you know, kind of figuring out where we want to take the next step. By the time we come back, you know, there'll be probably more than likely more Marvel content to pursue. And, like, other things will be going on that we can tackle as well.
Yeah, and I know, like, we've talked about a couple things already. We have an idea of what we're going to come back with because it's actually pretty straightforward. It's not as many... It's a quite a few films, but it's not as many films as the MCU. We're talking... So, and then obviously we'll probably eventually voyeur into DC at some point. Talk about the live action and the animated, because they have a great animated franchise that they have. And then not only that, but, you know, depending on when Black Widow comes out, we'll revisit the MCU. Then when Disney Plus content starts coming out for the MCU, we'll revisit that as well. Maybe we can do...
Y'all know I have been talking about WandaVision since WandaVision was announced.
And that's the thing. We could end up when WandaVision, Winter Soldier, Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the What If series, you know, when these start coming out, like, we could maybe just do episodes just on the episodes as they come out. So, you know,
that would be fun, actually. The point is that we have a lot of ideas we're tossing out, but we both kind of need a break because we have other projects going on. We have stuff going on in our personal lives that kind of need some attention. But it's not like this is the last you'll hear from us. No. It's just we need a little bit of a break.
I think people this is coming out in the last week of July, because we're recording it like a week and a half. Yeah, because we're like recording this like a good week in advance, because we're recording on the 25th. This, I believe, comes out on the 30th or the 31st of... Yeah, I think it's the 30th. Yes, the 30th. Yeah, so this is coming out on the 30th. We recorded this 5 days early. So we're probably going to end up taking all of August off and come back in September with the new game plan. Well, not necessarily new game plan, but with new what the next thing we're going to do for Nerdy Notions. So, because, yeah.
So with that, Michael, where can the people find you on the social medias?
On the social medias, you can find me on Twitter at TheLindenBaum75, Facebook at Facebook.com/X75Productions. And, of course, everything for me is on TXHTHockey.com. And for this show specifically, /Nerdy-Notions.
And for me, of course, it is Geeky Captain on Instagram, geekgirl101.tumblr.com, where I will argue with anybody about Marvel anything, come at me. And of course, on my new site, which is geekycaptainwrites@wordpress.com, where I actually write comic book reviews and analyses, which are very long, very in-depth, very snarky, and I encourage anybody that works for Marvel to take a look. So with that, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for bearing with us as we close this chapter on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And we look forward to seeing what we come up with in September.